Good afternoon. Welcome to Art House Radio. This is episode 29. I am recording this in the middle of a double shift, racing home, racing to record, to get it up for you. That's what I do for you, or for myself. Is it for both of us? It's probably more me. Yeah. But that's what I do. It's okay. I'm pressed for time. Aren't we all? I mean, you get yourself into situations, and then you have to get yourself out of them if you want to. And being pressed for time, you know, jobs, they are what they are, and they're fine. But sometimes we rush around, and I wish we could just shorten that work week a little bit. If I were dictator, your dictator, I would promise you that I would say the work week was, let's say, 5 hours a day, 4 days a week. I think that's plenty of time to get work done. Beyond that, I'm not sure what the production quality would look like. I think leisure time isn't given a whole lot of weight in this country called America. And I think that it should be more valued. I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm not a hippie. I might hug a tree occasionally, but I am not a hippie. And even if I was, which I'm not, but even if I was, who cares? I'm just trying to be logical. And I think 4 days a week, 5 hours a day is about enough. You know, how many people are out there doing jobs for 10 hours a day, ringing people up as a cashier? I mean, you shouldn't have to do that. Do it for 5 hours and be happy and have meaningful interactions and conversations with people. Oh, don't get me started. You get me every week. I turn this on and you wonderful people out there listening get me started. And I'm not being serious. Of course you don't. It's me. I know. It's always me. But that's what's happening. I'm recording in between and I've got a good episode coming up. It's a discussion between myself and Chris Ramos, and we talk about all kinds of things. I'm just going to let the interview speak for itself. It ranges, as usual, with people that are on the show. We talk about happiness and art and making that discovery when the world opens up to you, when you become aware of things in a very open and positive way. All wonderful things to talk about, right? If you are listening to this, maybe do a review. You could do that for me. You know, go to iTunes and click on ratings. Give me a star. The more stars, the better. The more stars, I'll love you. And then maybe just write a couple of words like, yeah, he sounds cool. I'm glad he does this or whatever. Just anything. Am I an enlightened soul? Do I sound like somebody who is thoughtful? Put that down there. Maybe, you know, like Troy shows promise. We think he has a lot of potential. He needs to apply himself more. You know, give me a real parent-teacher conference review. Let me have it. All right. But, you know, if you have to lean on the positive. Whoa, was that out loud? I didn't mean to influence your decision. Just if you could give me any sort of a review, if you love the show. And if you don't, maybe just shut your trap. Nobody wants to hear from you, especially Art House Radio. Okay, this is episode 29, and let's just go to it. Don't forget to follow me at Spanish Peanuts and on Facebook at Art House 43. And I'll see you on the other side. Enjoy.
I love how we're turning on the opposite shit.
Yep. As we sit here recording this, I had to turn off my heat so that it didn't make a white noise in the background, and Chris turned off his air conditioner in LA for the same reason. We're like the Jets and the Sharks. This is like West Side Story.
I know Jet Troy, I'm a shark.
I don't remember which one the Puerto Ricans were. They're the Sharks. I think they're the Sharks.
I think half of them weren't even Puerto Rican, so I think they were just they were browned up for the part.
They had brown face.
Brown face. Shit face.
Yeah, they just put the makeup on. It was like, what's her name? The
Maria wasn't even, she was white.
Yeah, she played Maria. Yeah, who was that? It was the woman who drowned. She was in East of Eden or Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah, I forget her name.
She was in, I believe the story goes that she was in a boat with Robert, Christopher Walken and Robert, the guy who played in Heart to Heart, that TV show.
Is it Natalie Wood?
Natalie Wood, yep, that's what it is. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Isn't the main guy, too? I think he was, like, Greek. He wasn't even Puerto Rican. The Greek. Because he was also in White Christmas, oddly enough.
He was one of the dancers on the stage, or on the steps with Danny Kaye. Yep.
He was Greek, man. He's not even Puerto Rican.
I don't know where his ancestry was, or his ethnicity. I'm not sure, but yeah. Yeah, I don't remember who Jets and Sharks was. Great, great musical, though. Great, great music. Love it.
Was it with the Sondheim?
No, it was Bernstein. Leonard Bernstein. Oh. Yep.
I thought it was Sondheim. Oh, West Side Story. Well, whatever.
Yeah, West Side Story. Bernstein. Yeah. So I was talking to somebody today, and they brought up something interesting. They said there was this writer in 2009 who said that the public, the general public, and this doesn't have anything to do with what we were just talking about, but he said that the general public has like a 19th century understanding of the world. Go.
19th century, which means that's the 1800s.
Right. What the writer meant was that the general public doesn't really understand what's going on. They only understand, like, they don't, like, nobody can really explain Einstein's theory of relativity. It's been around for 100 years or however long, but nobody really understands how it works. Maybe nobody understands how electricity works. Maybe nobody understands how things work. And I include myself in a lot of those categories.
Well, I actually have a counter proposal then to that theory, is that I think the opposite. I think that people don't know the basic shit of anything today. So they don't know how to survive on their own. They don't know how to make portable drinking water. They don't know how to hunt and fish. They don't know how basic things are made or to protect or to survive or whatever. And the new generation now, all they know is cell phones and technology, in my opinion. And which I guess if you want to compare it to the early 1800s, the people in that time, they probably just knew the basic stuff of that generation. Maybe that's what he meant, where it was the basics. Like, we only know the basics of now as compared to the people who knew the basics of the 1800s.
Yeah. The interesting thing, I think, is that you say that they only understand, well, that they understand internet and tech or technology and online activity or computer.
But the basics of it. So they don't know how a cell phone works. They don't know how the internet or a website works. They just go on it.
Right.
And they know how to get to it. They know how to open a browser and they know how to go to a website, but they don't know how it works behind the scenes, which comparably to the 1800s, people knew that they had to sow a plow or field, but they don't know. They didn't know, like, I don't know, the agricultural science behind it.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know anything about farming. But the interesting thing is that if they know how to use a cell phone or computer, but they don't know how to construct one or how to fix it, the interesting thing is that they could use that technology to learn those skills. They could learn the theory of relativity or how to fix a cell phone if they watched YouTube tutorials or took a class online that was maybe free. And then they could learn all these skills, but they don't. They just
True, most don't.
They just react. A vast majority, I would say, probably don't.
I mean, I find myself, I'm a pretty inquisitive person, so I'm always doing that type of stuff. Like, I have to know how things work. But, yeah, I would say for the most part, people are just going along about their day. And, like, in an office setting where I work, people know how to turn on the computer. They know how to open the same spreadsheet every day. They know how to go into the same mainframe screens and do what they do. They don't know the workings behind it a lot of the time. And so they're not running the office. The system's running the office. And really the programmers behind it don't really know how it all works. So there's always a select few or an esoteric group of people that know how things work. But for the vast majority, I kind of agree with that theory that, you know, people are functioning on a really low level, I guess is what he's really trying to say.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it doesn't apply to everyone, obviously. I wonder what percentage, there's no way to know, but it would be interesting to know what portion of the population is fucking off too much.
Right.
How much of them aren't aware of basic things like manners or respect for other people or the concept of other people and empathy and sympathy, all the way up to, can you fish? Can you survive? Could you, and those are things that I struggle with. Can you fix your bike? Can you fix a car? Can you,
right. Flat tire. People don't do fucking flat tire, man. Like it's astounding to me how many people don't, they have to call AAA.
I think it was like in 2003, I was looking at a house to rent back in BC. And the guy that was showing me the house, we ended up talking for a long time about the city and like just conversing about the neighborhood. It was close to where we grew up, that house on Laurel Drive. Shout out to Laurel Drive.
Laurel.
And he was talking about this woman who looked at a house in the neighborhood, and he said, she told him, I need to mail this letter. Do you know where the post office is? And she was like maybe in her 60s or whatever. And he just looked at her and said, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, you're like 65. You know where the fucking post office is? like how much participation are you having in society where you don't even know where the post office is? Like you don't know where, how, if you don't know where the post office is, do you know where, when the festivals are happening? Do you know who your neighbors are? Do you know how to plant a garden? Do you know, I mean, what don't you know if you don't even know where the post office that's probably been there for 100 years is?
Well, the ironic thing, going back to this technology thing, is people don't have to leave their house to do anything anymore. You know, that you can have everything delivered.
They can go to stamps.com.
Stamps.com. They can shop online for clothes, food. Like, we have something called Pink Dot out here where they deliver groceries and alcohol. I mean, you don't have to fucking go to the liquor store anymore, man. People just have it delivered there. And mail, you don't have to leave. Like, you can have it messenger by UPS or whatever. You know, like, you don't have to leave your property at all, which is, it puts people back into a, kind of a hermit state, I guess.
Yeah, an isolated state. It's the paradox of being connected and alone at the same time. You're connected to everything. You can have everything delivered. You don't have to go outside if you don't want to. And in some ways, that sounds great for laziness or if you have a disability. But how much? What are you losing in that exchange? Like, if an Apple comes out with a phone or a tablet or a new MacBook and it's the greatest thing in the world, you buy it, you use it, and you think that you're just using it and that's the end of it. But isn't it possible that that device is taking something from you as well? You aren't aware of it.
Right.
It goes both ways, I think.
You know, and I think I love, this is related, so go with me on this. I love apocalypse type shows. Like, I like The Walking Dead, and I like, you know, The End of the World is Here. What do you do now? Like, people don't know how to fucking function, and you see the world collapse because people are stupid when it comes to knowing how things work and how to survive and how to defend for your own, and you just see people falling by the wayside, and there's only a select group of people that are left who are still kicking and fighting, you know. And this was a bad movie, but I for some reason the Kevin Costner movie called Waterworld, you remember that?
Yes, but I never saw it.
It was a horrible movie, but the concept was so interesting to me because there's no more land like anywhere is the concept, and we're 72% water on the Earth anyway. So the reality is that could happen, you know, like. And people are just on ships, just sailing around to each other, and they have to find a way to adapt, and they don't know how to do that. Only the smart survive or whatever. And so I like watching those shows because
Sounds fishy.
it, yeah. Well, it reveals a lot. It's very telling about how smart a civilization is, and I don't think we're very smart. But.
I think a civilization that takes its food and water for granted is playing with fire, and that's probably it. I think we just are in this habit of, because we can just push a button and have somebody deliver 5,200 bags of Crunchers, mesquite barbecue flavor, that you don't have to
was
know how
very
to,
specific.
yeah, I'm craving them. You don't have to like learn how to plant vegetables. You don't have to learn how to plant fruit because you can get somebody else to do it. So it's you're removed from it. It's like going to the store and buying a pack of sausages or bratwursts. You don't have to go find a pig or whatever, wherever brats come from. Somebody else does it for you, and they put it in a nice little package, like almost like a Christmas present, wrap it up, might as well put a bow on it.
Well, it's even more to the point of not just sausages, but what about, I think it's important for people to know, okay, what if there is no more meat, then how is vegan sausage made or whatever, you know, because that stuff is so smart to me, like how people make supplementary food items like vegan whatever, you know, tofurkey or what have you. Those people, they're smart because they figured out that they developed a way to kind of do something completely in a completely different way. The same thing in a completely different way. So you don't need a pig, but then maybe you can pick up a patch of grass and rub it together with some, I don't
Glue.
know, flour and glue, and you got a pancake. I don't know, man. You know, like it's
Yeah.
some people have a knack for that, but not a lot. When we were talking about when I brought up Elon Musk, like to me, those the innovators are very interesting to me, like a Steve Jobs or a Elon Musk, because man, they can take shit apart and build it back anew in a totally different way, and it's just amazing to me, man.
I don't know anything about Elon Musk. I know that he has that space program. I try to watch interviews with him, and he just, maybe I just can't connect with his way of talking or speaking, but he seems ghoulish in a way. Like I feel like, and that's an unfair thing to say because I'm basing it off the way he looks and the way he speaks, but I feel like he's so far invested in space and the future of technology, and I could be wrong, but it seems like he seems like the kind of guy that's going to welcome the singularity. I could be wrong, but I look at him and I almost hear him saying things like, "And then we will all merge into one through computers." And like, I just think, oh God, it's creepy the way that.
He's your typical nerd that he's not, I mean, maybe the personality was never there, you know what I mean? But I mean,
Nerds took over the world.
they did. Well, Steve Jobs was a big nerd and he was very charismatic, I guess. And Neil deGrasse Tyson or Brian Cox or whatever from England, like
Yeah.
they're very, but they're smart and they're charismatic. Now he's not as charismatic as those other guys, but he's done some great, he's built some amazing things here on Earth. It only makes sense, I guess. These are the, I mean, the kind of minds like that, they can't be bound by just what's here, you know, like, so they look for what else is out there. And, like he built PayPal and Tesla cars and all that. And I don't know, man, it sounds like I didn't realize what was eye opening to me was our NASA program has been suffering for a long time.
Yeah, it doesn't
And
have any
so he,
funding.
no funding. And we've been using Russia to go to the moon for the last decade or so. And this is crazy.
Hitching a ride.
Hitching a ride. And I don't know. I just kind of find the guy interesting, at least his work interesting. I mean, I know he's kind of a ghoul.
Well, the thing that I started watching a video today about him, and he was speaking at Yale or something, and you know, they speak at college campuses, they all gather around and they love to present the lecturer as this sort of godlike figure. And yeah. the guy gave this introduction of like, and he's, you know, he was the 2009 Forbes Man of the Year. He was the 2002 graduate of Yale University or whatever you call it. And you'll go on and on. And then they all applaud. And he just like nods like he's in the Politburo. He's like, thank you. Thank you very much. And then you listen to him and they just complete praise at the beginning. And then he goes into his shtick, which could be great. I don't know. But it just makes me think like how much acknowledgement is going on of past inventors. I mean, Thomas Jefferson said that every invention or every inventor stands on the shoulders of previous inventions or inventors. Yeah. So, I mean, Elon Musk may be a great mind and Steve Jobs may have been a great mind, but those guys stood on the backs of other people to get where they were. So if they think that they're better than Earth, they might be in some ways, but they had to use Earthlings to get to where they were.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would totally recognize and
probably, yeah.
I don't think that they're saying they're bigger than Earth, and that I think that
bigger than Earth. Bigger That's than the Earth. Name of his first book. Yeah. Bigger than Earth, just the middle finger, just having a middle finger.
No, I think they like when I hear them talk, like a lot of those people we mentioned. I mean, I think they give homage to those guys. I mean, I think they're very appreciative of it. It's just,
did you say Amish?
Homage. They give homage to people and make tofurkey out of them. No, I think. But what are you supposed to do at some point? I mean, a scientist is explaining what is here, but also figuring out what could be. And you're not supposed to be stagnant. I mean, there's no point to be stagnant with it. You know, it's progress. So to me, there's an expense of being too progressive. Absolutely. However. Like, I'd love that there's a fucking Mars rover over on Mars right now. Like, this is awesome to me. Like, I mean, nobody ever thought that you could have something living, or it's not living, it's a machine, but something over there that you're controlling from here. That's amazing, man.
It is amazing. That more people should be talking about that. More people should, I've always thought that people should get up in the morning and look up at the sun rising or go out at night at the stars and just
absolutely
sit there for 30 minutes and go, what the fuck is happening here?
And that's the thing, like full circle, as the sun and the earth are full circles. We were talking about people don't understand how shit works. People don't know. I bet people can't. They don't know how the earth rotates around the sun and how long it takes. They don't know like why
I don't.
Michigan is so cold around six months of the year and Southern California isn't. And, they don't. Yeah, I mean, I have best guess at how that stuff works.
We're spinning. I know that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the Earth rotates itself to every 24 hours, and then 365 days it takes to rotate the sun once. I think that's how it works. So that's 1 year. But anyway, yeah, I mean, that's just there's so much out there to know that I just think that people get wrapped up in getting home from work at 10:30 at night and. Mm-hmm. Trying to get a little peace of mind, and they don't have time to think about sunsets and Mars rovers,
sunrises, sunsets, all that. Yeah, they. No, I. We were talking earlier too about all the shit that we've put up in the sort of the orbit, like all the satellites and the junk, and you know, sometimes this still happens on a regular basis. I think that there are asteroids that land. There was one, I think, over the. Like in the middle of winter that landed like in one of the oceans that nobody saw. Like it was huge and like it, or it came really close. So I don't want to make up stories here, but I read it somewhere that there was something that came really close and nobody saw it. It's like all these scientists looking at it. Did you see that, doctor? No, you didn't. I didn't see that either. And one of these days, there's going to be one that you don't see and it's going to have a huge fucking impact. And then you're going to be reminded, oh yeah, we're in the universe. We're not, you know, eating, we're not just eating lunch at Long John Silver's here on our break at Office Depot. We are in the universe. We're spinning around a sun inside a galaxy, inside the cosmos. And maybe it doesn't matter if we're late for work, or maybe it doesn't matter if, you know, we don't make our mortgage payments.
Yeah. Is it not fucking crazy that we're in constant motion right now?
It's crazy to me. We're I don't fucking, know.
I mean, and Troy, only thing keeping the water from falling out into the sky and us from falling out of the sky is fucking gravity. We're being held together by gravity.
And we don't know. We don't understand how gravity works.
No.
We have an idea, but we don't know.
It's unfucking real to me, man. And, you know, think about this. You know, there are actually, I think I've heard this, there are no real colors in the world.
Right.
It's the reflection of through our corneas and retinas. Mm-hmm. Through the light, it's light reflection. There's no blue or green. Well, you know, there is in our eyes or in the reflection, but it's the sunlight. The water isn't blue.
No, we're just seeing. Right. I don't understand how this works. Every time I make the same argument, I'm like, there's no colors, man. I'm like, how do you get orange? People are like, well, you mix red and yellow together. And I'm like, how do you get red and yellow? That's my point. Like, I understand the color. Well, I understand how you get the color wheel. The point is that, like, this thing is happening, and I'm not sure. Maybe we can't handle that, though. I mean, that's kind of a big thing to sit out and think about. Like, the cosmos is around you. Wom, wom, wom. All day long.
There are people who that's their job. Like, there's a show, Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos. I mean, that's what he does.
Sure. You know? I just mean like the everyday person, the person working at Quality Dairy or the person working at Burger King. They've got to dish out these bags of fries and onion rings and hopefully an onion ring or two in that bag of fries, because that's jackpot. When you get those things of fries at Burger King and there's an onion ring down there and you're like, whoa.
Called it.
But they can't hand you that bag of Lucky Fries with an onion ring prize.
Lucky Fries.
With the onion ring prize. They can't hand you that and go, by the way, here's your treat in the universe. They have to just keep going. There's another person that wants that's got a fucking Whopper.
Yeah, they can't think about the probability of that happening. You know, they got a stack of fries over here and a stack of onion rings over here and the probability of mixing one with the other.
If you think about the movie They Live, that old movie with Roddy Piper, where he finds these box of sunglasses in a church. It doesn't matter how he got to that point.
This is the best plot ever. Go ahead.
He finds these sunglasses in the church, and he takes one of them because, you know, he's concerned about his eye care or whatever. He takes one of them, steals it, puts it in his pocket, walking on the street, puts them on. And the billboards don't say, you know, buy Cheez-Its anymore. They say, like, you know, obey your master. Remember the aliens rule you or whatever. And it's subliminal advertising. He tries to get his friend to, and he can also see who the aliens are, by the way. It sees through everybody's wearing flesh colored. Everybody's in flesh and everything. But underneath you can see the structure, the exoskeleton or whatever you want to call it. So anyway, he tries to get his friend to put the sunglasses on, and his friend fights him. They fist fight for like a 10-minute scene because the friend does not want to put these sunglasses on. He doesn't want to put them on because he knows that when he puts those sunglasses on, his world is going to be forever changed. He doesn't want to let go of his routine. He doesn't want to let go of that going down, get a Schlitz after work and going home and watching the ball game with his buddies and going home and just passing out. He may hate his life. He may love his life, but he doesn't want to think like there's a universe out there that we're spinning, that we could explode any day, that a solar flare could take us out. It's too much. So they don't want to put the sunglasses on. And maybe people shouldn't put the sunglasses on, the ones who can't handle it, for all those big things. But to come full circle again, it would be nice if they put the glasses on to learn how to tie a knot, or to learn how to fish, or to learn how to be respectful of their neighbors, and to just remember that it isn't all about, you know, progressing in a socioeconomic way all the time, or upward mobility, or retirement. Like, there are other things in this universe that are in front of you right now. They aren't just some insignificant preamble to something that never comes.
Maybe they're also scared, too, that, because this is true with science, I think, you discover one new thing and it leads to another new thing and then another new thing and it branches out, and like, who the fuck has time to follow that path, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you're only going to get a quarter answer every time. And so I get that maddening part about it. But at the same time, If you don't know where the fucking post office is, there's no fucking hope for you.
Well, there's hope, but I think it just reminds you of how many people out there don't know where the post office is, and you're trying to do your part, and then you look around and nobody's doing theirs. Or
right.
There's enough people like that who don't know where the post office is. I still like to say, I realize there are a ton of idiots in the world. I still like to say that people are being idiots rather than they are idiots, because it's always a changeable thing, I think. Somebody can be an idiot for 40 years, 50 years, and then all of a sudden something happens. They wake up and then they're like, oh yeah, flowers, those are interesting. Or birds, like what is, maybe I'm a fuckface. Maybe I've been a fuckface. Maybe I'm going to turn my life around and try and be something better than that. I'm going to try to understand my neighbors or their problems, or I'm going to do something nice for them. Oh, we're doing nice things feels good. Let me try that again. But I think people get into the habit of being idiots.
And I'll tell you, the answer is probably almost assuredly yes, you are being a fuckface. Because I think everybody, even those who are devoting their lives to kind of looking past, you know, not getting tunnel vision and looking past what they're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are assholes most of the time, you know, but people are fuckfaces. I mean, the answer is yes, you can always do more, I guess is my point.
Yeah.
You can always try more. You're not doing enough. I'll tell you that right now. Nobody is.
I wonder what the connection is. How do you, does everybody have to find their own way to put the sunglasses on, so to speak? For me, it was music. For you, it was drawing and painting. Mm. What is it that, is it just an individual journey people have to make, find something that takes them through to the garden?
Yeah, and people forget about reading. I mean, come on. I mean, that's a fucking pastime that's got long forgotten, but
like penmanship.
Penmanship, yeah. I can barely write cursive anymore. You know, I wonder the last time I was going to write cursive. It's only in letters and if that.
I still do it, but it is difficult. Or I mean, it's not difficult. It feels sloppier now.
Well, yeah, or like we'll do birthday cards at work, and I'm like, God damn it, man! Like, it looks like a 2-year-old was trying to write that, but whatever.
I don't think it's like a biased opinion to think that the arts is the best way. I mean, I think it's a great way and I prefer it over all the other ones, but some people might build model engines or trains or have like train sets or whatever. And that could, that the discovery of that one thing helps them think about everything, and it's in a way at large or fragmentary.
I think you just said it. It's an undeniable way to achieve it. But it's if it's your preference, it's great. If it's not, there's other things. And art is one way to kind of open your mind to other things. I mean, it's I don't know. It could be volunteering. Like, I volunteer at the dog shelter. You know, I mean, it just kind of takes you out of your routine, like you were saying. Because if you're stuck in that routine and always stuck there, you're not gonna think about anything else.
Hmm.
You're not gonna want to.
Yeah, but I there's something about art that's really particularly interesting, because if you're interested in cars, say, you kind of have to get your hand on a car to do it. You kind of have to, you know, have the tools. You have to have somebody showing you how to do something. Or you, I guess nowadays you could look up YouTube tutorials and you could do that for everything. But art is interesting to me because it doesn't necessarily have to be anything that you own or that you even have to do or practice. If you want to learn how to fix bikes and that's your way of connecting with the world, you kind of have to have a bike to do that, but you don't have to own art. You can, there was this great show in Britain. I should put this up on an episode where he was talking about the difference between art and the real world. And he was saying that if you give somebody a plate of food, their survival instincts kick in and they'll eat it most of the time, even if they're not hungry, because they're thinking like nourishment, they're thinking survival. Mm-hmm. But if you give them a painting of a plate of food, then they're not hungry. They just look at it and they think about it and they like it aesthetically or they don't. It's become a completely different thing than, it's still a plate of food. It's obviously not edible, but it's like a representation, which is, makes art kind of interesting.
But it could be a trigger. It can make you hungry or full too, just by looking at food. So like, I've had people tell me like they've looked at like a buffet of food and They don't eat much because they're full just by looking at it, which is weird to me. But also, if you look at a plate of food, you see a commercial and you see pizza commercial. Oh, I'm fucking hungry,
That's
man.
true. Yeah. Well, they're also trying to convince you that you should have their pizza rolls shoved on your pizza roll hole because they're trying to sell you, like, I still remember nacho commercials from like the 90s where they're like, fat guys in like Jimmy Buffett shirt saying like, "Hey man, don't just sit there, eat something." I remember them saying that line, and they're trying to flash you into with all these projections to get you hungry. Whereas a still life by Cezanne or some other thing that represents something, there, I don't know that they're not trying to convince you to eat fruit. There's a lot of symbolism in there. They're showing you like either great technique to paint these things as they are. But there's also all these other messages. So, I mean, there are messages in those commercials too, but I mean the point of those commercials is to get you to eat, whereas the art is just, it can be to get you to think about revolution. It can get you to think about camaraderie or life or love or whatever it is.
Well, I think it's also a different way to look at food. That's what art does. It's you don't have to look at it as something on your plate. You look at it as something hanging on a wall, or, I mean, I've been to museums and I've seen like, so there's different ways to look at fruit in a painting. You could look at it like a realist oil painting that looks very real, just like fruit. Or you could look at a surrealist and say, "Oh, this is a black and white George Seurat type drawing where it's very blurry and it blends into the background, and that is fruit." But now I look at fruit like differently. Maybe it's rotted fruit. I don't know. Like, it doesn't have to be like fresh fruit. It could be rotted fruit. Now you're kind of thinking about fruit in a different way, in that, oh yeah, like, I don't know. Don't be wasteful, or whatever is the message you take away from that, or something.
Yeah, it could be anything. I mean, it's the idea of it's interesting because a representational art isn't something that I normally get into, but the idea is that it represents, I don't know, a creativity or artistic ability or creation or something that makes you it. It sort of suspends. I guess the point is that if you're given a plate of food, you think with lust or greed or gluttony. But if you're given a painting of something, it's like the only thing I can think of that suspends that selfishness and just makes you look at this thing, whether you like it, the beauty of it or you don't, or what does it mean. So for a minute or two, you forget about taking, and eating and greed. Because you're thinking about art and what it means and all these different possibilities. And then you turn around and go outside, and then you're like, man, I got to get a burrito, or I got to get a better job, or whatever. So that's the thing I like about art, is that it can suspend those sort of greedy or needy things that you have, those urges.
Yeah, and but I mean, let's be very straightforward. If you're looking at a painting of a hamburger, well, you've taken away a major sense of smell from it, right? Smell is a big thing that draws you to food, whereas you're just looking at it. So I think right away you're going to look at it a little bit differently. Like, if a dog will eat anything, you show a picture of a dog food to a dog, they're not going to eat it.
Right, that's my point. Like,
Yeah.
well, they're not going to recognize that, but like, yeah, that's my point, is that that's what it does. It serves a different purpose. So that's what I like about it. However, there is somebody, a philosopher or somebody, who said that they thought that the moment we started using representational things is the moment that we started to go downhill as a species, because we stopped having experiences and we started looking at pictures of our trip or pictures of our grandfather's summer home or the painting on the wall or whatever, and those were good enough. We didn't need to go out and experience art shows or take vacations or go to that cottage, because we could look it up online, we could look at pictures in our photo albums. Representational things replace those, so let's spend all our time working.
Yes, I do get that. At the same time, I think a big part of why people rely on that is because it's expensive to go to travel to Europe and go visit and experience Europe, for instance. So they, you know, they're challenged monetarily to have experiences, though they could go outside and go to a park. I mean, that's definitely an option, but
That should be good enough, though, shouldn't it? I mean, we do
for
have
most
the,
days, yeah.
well, we have this fascination with traveling around the world and going to all these places, but at what point the point of what's his name, Molière, Voltaire's book Molière, I think that's the book where he goes on all these adventures and travels around the world and he discovers all these things and has these great experiences and he comes home and he realizes, you know what? I'm just going to take care of my garden. I can find everything I need in my neighborhood because that's the perspective that I choose to accept, and therefore I like that. Whereas I don't need to work 80 hours a week to save up for that Paris trip. And so then I go to Paris and then I come back home and I'm like, man, I wish I lived in Paris for years. And then you get into that trap rather than just making your own garden interesting in your own park in your neighborhood or your neighbors or block parties and all that.
But can you appreciate your own garden if you haven't traveled to figure it
That's
out?
part of the book. Yeah, you have to maybe take that journey, I think. This is the same thing that we're talking about before, is how do you make these discoveries? How do you
Right.
come to this discovery that your garden is probably just as beautiful as anything Paris has to offer?
Life's a garden, Troy, dig it.
Don't quote Joe Dirt lines on this show, Brian.
I don't know who Joe Dirt is. I know who Joe Dirt is, but we talked about this in a previous episode too, though, about people not appreciating home if they haven't traveled. Like if everybody was afforded at the beginning of their lives a way to travel to a destination, I mean, how much happier the place is that they go back to, like if they return back to Michigan or whatever, how much better a community it would be because people see what's possible, or people see bring new ideas, or bring a deeper appreciation for maybe they go to, I don't know why you choose to go to Iraq, you know, like during Baghdad or like a war or something, but come back and be like, man, Michigan's really good. I don't want to ever leave again. So, I don't think you can achieve that just by looking at pictures. Going back to what you were saying about that guy, whoever you said. We try to make that a satisfactory way to have good experiences. I think you have to physically venture out, and for the most days it's outside your door, but other days it's outside the country or outside the state or something. You have to
Yeah.
be able to travel.
No, I agree with you. I traveled around a lot. I lived in outside the country, and I traveled outside the country, and coming back to Michigan now, I definitely appreciate it more. I appreciate all the things that we do here more that are unique to this place, whatever it is. And for me, I had to leave in order to appreciate that. Then I think that's probably true of most people. There are some people who get that straight away who are just fucking genius, like some people understand that and they maybe go to Paris still, but they're like, yeah, as I predicted, I would love my garden more than Paris.
Douchebag.
But if they sometimes people know that, those are just probably the people who, I don't know if they're gifted or they're smarter or whatever, but some of those people who realize things at an early age and they aren't douchey or anything, they just realize things. Man, that's such an advantage in a human meatbag life form where you've only got 70 years with this body of fluids and soggy bits that you have to figure it out before you break down and die, and
Yeah.
figuring out that stuff earlier, it doesn't matter when you do, but if you want to if you want to progress in sort of that system that we have of understanding things or writing books or having art shows or whatever, it does have a huge advantage if you can discover that earlier.
Well, advantage is an interesting word because, well, when we're talking about that saying you said that you heard today about we're functioning in the 1800s, early 1800s. I mean, if you're so far ahead of everybody, it sounds like it could be a lonely life.
Yeah,
Like,
that's true too.
who are
Yeah.
you going to relate to besides other geniuses, which is 1% of the world? And, like, I don't know, it could be a very lonely life at the top, I think. I'd like to be near the top. I don't know if I'd like to be on top.
Yeah, no, and that's probably a, I mean, if we're living in some ways like individually now in 2016, apart from the people who are really struggling and who don't have food and all that, the average American at least is living like the life of a 16th century French king or queen. I mean, I can get cheesecake anytime I want. But the thing that separates the king and the queen from the lowly peasant and the lowest person on that ladder, it might be materialistically, it might be a lot, but they both deal with the same fucking thing that's the most important. Your body's gonna break down, you're gonna die. Both of you have to deal with that and you can't escape it. It'll grab you and swallow you up. So whether you're a king or a queen or you're on the bottom, you have to deal with that. And if you can find a way to, even if you make discoveries when you're at a young age, it's really hard until you have experiences to be able to balance that in and bake that into that life cake and make sure it tastes good in all different ways. You know, you gotta, it that takes time. You can't just, you know, like it's like if you see a 10-year-old child star who's like singing like, you know, on Broadway, just letting it loose. And you think like, okay, that's great that they can sing, but they don't know anything about getting, you know, their heart broken, or you know, they don't know what it's like to be in a circle of people and making jokes. They don't know what it's like to do a good line of blow. I
Or maybe
don't
they do. Maybe they
either.
do.
I
I
don't
heard some
either.
stories about Starships, Roy. I mean, some crazy, crazy fucking
Yeah, I'm
stories about
sure.
Starships.
Well, I don't either, but I'm just saying like they haven't had any experiences yet. So they're too, it doesn't matter if their talent's there. It takes both.
I mean, it's the same thing for, yeah. I mean, someone who pushes their child to be a football star or something, you know, like well, I guess that's the opposite actually, because that's a popular way to grow up, right? Is to be an athlete, and you do get all those social experiences, but at the same time, you're fucking stupid or whatever. You're not gonna. You're always gonna get the bottom rung of everything, intellectually. But although.
It would be interesting to see people rank, like if they all say like, yeah, this is what made me break through. Like, what wakes you up? Like, you know, what makes you aware of the world? That moment of clarity where you may not know everything and you may have a long way to go to understanding different subjects or one subject, but there's a moment where you start to wake up. And I mean, for me, that was when I started using weed and playing music. There was something about the two of that was just like an awakening process. So I wonder if everybody, like if you take a poll of like 100,000 people and sort of categorize it and say like what was for you? Was it the arts? Was it math? Was it gardening? Was it whatever? I'd love to see what that pie chart looked like.
Big pie chart, I'm
It'd be a
assuming.
big pie chart, but I really think that there are the creative things would, I don't know, they would probably be a big chunk of that. I'd love to see the results.
I mean, I think, yeah, I think arts would be a big, big chunk of that pie. And I have an example of, currently I've been in preparation for doing a live art exhibit for sketching live in an art show. I've been drawing. Sketching each of my colleagues at work every day at lunch the last couple of weeks, and I'll be doing a couple more. And these are people who don't really know much about art, but they're fascinated by the process that I go through. And we have very interesting conversations the whole hour that I'm sketching them. And I think that I see some of them having an awakening, like, oh yeah, I'm glad you're open to do something like this because I like to write or I like to play music or whatever. And so I think everybody innately wants to be creative or artistic in some way.
And I think it gets schooled out of you to a certain degree. Like you, everybody, I think, has the ability to do those things. If you started teaching kids at the age of first grade or second grade, whatever those ages are, and you let them paint, and you didn't treat it like it was some sort of a special activity, or like, hey, today's going to be an easy day. We're not going to shove stupid MEEP scores or, you know, math down your throat. Like you just let them paint, and you just let them. Let's just go outside, lay in the grass, and talk about the trees. It sounds funny. People who hear that, like teachers might hear that and go, that sounds pretty fucking stupid. You know, like it's not stupid. It's the world that we live in to learn how to react to things and to see things right. and to talk about the sky. Why are these clouds this shape? What does that shape look like? What does this building mean? When was it built? Let's talk about the history.
I think people take, you know, people learn to start building houses and buildings, and then they go inside and they forget what's outside because they like the comfort of it. And that the point of building a house or building something to live in was not to forget about the outside world. It was just to protect yourself and still go outside all the time. And
little castles and, everywhere.
Yeah. But people have taken it for granted. They never, I mean, there's people just never leave their house or, yeah, I don't know.
That's crazy. Strange to me. I never thought of it that way. That's crazy because you had all these people who were living in fucking haystacks or under a tree for how, or at a cave for how many fucking years. And then all of a sudden we get this concept of building buildings. And you would think that people would be like, man, this is great. I got this great place to go home to. I'm just going to hang out in the park. I'm going to talk to people. No, we didn't do that. We retreated into them and they became like jail cells, essentially.
They did. Absolutely. That's a good point because, I don't know. I think it's about, people want to create their own little worlds.
Yeah.
Maybe. And I think people who are not happy with the outside world or people who have been rejected or, you know, socially or whatever, they retreat to that. And so they create their own little happy worlds or whatever. Well, they don't want to ever leave it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if everybody who, we all do it for different reasons. And there's certainly rejection that everybody goes through, but there's a lot of people who retreat into their world because of rejection. But I think a lot of people do it just because it could be habit. It could be that you want to recover from your 10-hour workday. It could be
right.
You've just gotten into the routine of, hey, this bed is really comfortable. I'm going to go on that for a while. TV takes my mind off of my asshole boss, you know, or whatever it might be at different stages of your life. So,
or
I mean,
people then become responsible for things in that place, like kids or dogs or, or, you know, so they now they're bound to go back.
Right. Yeah, they have to. It's become their castle. They spend all their time. Everything's based off of that. You spend 8 hours a day sleeping there, and you probably spend 7 or 8 hours a day being there, doing work or hanging around or whatever.
And watch then, the local news, and that's how they learn about the world.
Right, and then you spend the other 8 hours maybe doing adventures outside or maybe going to work, and that's pretty much it. And it might be, I mean, if we had to go back in time and live like a caveman or like a tribesman in the Potawatomi tribe for a week, we'd probably come back and go, fuck, that sucked. Yeah. You know, I had a fucking panther chase me. It was awful. You know, you
snake bit my nuts.
Yeah, snake bites on the nuts, panther chasing you, fucking making corn tortillas from scratch. Fuck that. I'll just go to Kroger every time. I think there's also that too. We do sit around and complain about a lot of people complain about technology and we don't go outside enough. And a lot of the reason is because a lot of the shit that's been invented is fucking awesome. Beds, devices, televisions, you know, it's fucking fantastic.
Water filters and, we're Skyping right now. Microphones, so ironically.
Frying pans, everything, toilets, showers. It's fucking amazing. Every little apartment, let's just say in this country, every little apartment has a fucking shower and a toilet and a sink and a kitchen and an oven and a fridge and all a couch, a living room, bed. It's amazing.
Porn.
All that. Throw it all in there. Let's get crazy.
Fucking, yeah. Wow.
But I think because it's so good, maybe we just, when we complain about it or we look for answers outside of it, it's because we're so addicted to it and we're just trying to ask for help.
Well, at the same time, I love being able to drive my car and go to the art store and pick up supplies and drive my car back and make art or whatever. I mean, it's an addiction. It's also the resources that are available to me. You know, so if I have to pay money to go get supplies and drive my car and use gas for that and come back, it's worth the creative process, I guess. But it's not worth me having cable and paying $100 a month for fucking cable I don't watch. So you gotta pick your battles, I guess, but
Yeah, we definitely go overboard with some things, but that's maybe part of being human. We go overboard with chocolate cake. We go overboard with TV. We go overboard with drinking, smoking, all of that. I mean, it's hard for us to curb addiction.
sure.
That's just what we do. We're gonna keep doing it. This is
We
fucking.
latch onto something and we don't let go.
Yeah, especially in America. This is America. We do what we want. If you're listening to this in one of the places that download this podcast, in the Netherlands or in New Zealand or in Australia or the UK,
Maybe the
I'm
Mars rover at some point.
yeah, Mars rover at some point. Maybe the Mars rover is downloading this. Like, glad you're listening, but let me tell you something. This country likes to party, and we do it up. We blend cheesecake and beers all together and hamburgers just to get them all down at once.
Food porn, baby. Food
Right, that's a
porn.
Yankee smoothie.
Yeah. Yankee smoothie.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Art House Radio is brought to you by people who go to our website and arthouse43.com or troymeetsworld.com, and they click on donate and they make recurring donations or one-time donations. It really helps. I'm not going to lie. I need that sort of thing. If you want to just give to the show, if you want to give to the show and then say, hey, listen, I wrote this poem. Would you read it out loud? Would that be the exchange? Let's barter. I would do that. You got a piece of music you want me to play? We'll send it to me and I'll think about it. I need to hear this. I can't just go, you know, you can't just give me, you know, $20 and I can't just play your terrible acoustic guitar strumming. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. But if I like it, I will. But if I'm a little bit sensitive when it comes to music, but anything else, if you have a poem, I will read it. As long as you don't mind me, sort of looking at it and saying, hey, I think that's interesting. Or boy, that was terrible. I'll never do that again. You gotta be open to things. I probably wouldn't say anything bad about it. Is this a terrible sales pitch? I think it might be. Your support is crucial. Artistic projects are never free, so any support you could give will be greatly appreciated. I have some very interesting episodes coming up. You should stay tuned. I've got a lot of downloads this week. I don't know what's happening. You guys are happy about the spring. I'm not sure. You're frisky. Your things are falling in place for you. The birds are singing and the bees are buzzing, and you know, the crocuses are out, and so are other things. Anyway, keep it up, whatever it is. Just don't forget to go to iTunes and give me a review. Make sure you tell your friends, share it on Facebook, maybe just one post. People will hate you for like 2 minutes and then they'll get over it. It's really nothing, and you'd be helping out your old buddy Troy and Art House Radio. Don't you want to help us out? At least you could do that. If you're not going to go to the website and say, I'm going to give $10 in support of this thing that I listen to or that I download, wherever you are, if you're in the Netherlands, or also known as the Netherlands, or you're in Australia, or the UK, or Germany, or Canada. Hi, Canada. I'm so close to you. I live in Michigan, Lansing, Michigan. Let's hang out. Let's talk. This is one way to do it. Just go in there and donate $10. Do it one time. Do a recurring. It's, you know, I hate to do a pledge drive every week, but this shit isn't free. This is my time. This is me putting effort into something. And I am a perfectionist, and I put a lot of time into it, more time than I should. But I am happy you're listening. If you're listening right now, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you in episode 30. There should be like a milestone, 30 episodes. Whoa. I mean, whoa, 30 episodes. Ugh. Should maybe have a big party for that one. We'll see. Until next time, friends.